the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. It feels strange to be sat here recording this at a desk rather than on a train, but normal service is resumed for the pod this week. There's plenty of action both on and off the pitch that we've missed in the month that we've been doing specials, so we can't wait to get stuck into things this week, and we have the old regular crew reunited once again. I am joined by Brandon Chemers up in Beijing. How are you doing, Brandon?
I'm good, Steve. Celebrating Guan's mid-season championship in a less flatulent Beijing now that you guys are gone.
Well, the half-season championship worked out so well last year, but there'll be plenty of time for us to get into that. And joined from a distance this time from Shanghai by Cameron Wilson. How are you doing, Cam?
Pretty good, Steve. There's going to be less flatulence, as Brandon said, this time round, but hopefully it will be as interesting a discussion as we enjoyed on the train in person last time.
And possibly more coherent. No Baijiu has been consumed in the making of this pod, which is not something we could say last time.
As far as you know.
Certainly not.
Speak
here
for yourself,
in Australia.
Steve.
Anyway, let's get straight into things. it's going to be one of those. I can feel it already. We're shaking off the rust here. We could, you know, look at the league table and some of the fixtures that we've missed and some of the games that are coming up. There'll be time to do that, I think, in the second half of the pod. I want to start with maybe the biggest news story and controversy that's been rumbling on over the last few weeks that we haven't really spoken about for a little while on the pod, and that is the topic of naturalization. Now, since we last spoke, there have been lots of apparently quite credible stories around a number of players, primarily, I think, Elkerson and Goulart, who's moved back to Guangzhou, apparently being naturalized at the request of Lippi to fit into the national team. I mean, I'm not sure how much we believe in these rumors and what they would mean for the side. Anyway, Brandon, you've been one of the more outspoken voices against this idea. I'm going to come to you first. I mean, is it dramatic to say that this is almost a battle for the soul of Chinese football at this point?
I don't think it's overdramatic. At this point, you know, Lippi has come out and said publicly that the Chinese team as it currently stands isn't good enough and naturalization is important to move it forward. And I think this is the guy that you've brought back. You knew who he was. You brought him back. You're paying him. I mean, the last time around, he's supposedly the second or third highest paid manager in the world. You're paying an unbelievable amounts. And what he's saying is basically that he, this Italian millionaire, wants to bring in these people that have no Chinese ethnic roots, that have only spent limited time in China. They've spent or are close to spending the 5 years that FIFA requires, but that's all they've done. They're basically mercenaries. They don't speak Chinese. They don't have any cultural roots here. They don't have the intention of spending any time here, and they're going to be the future of the Chinese national team. To me, it's outrageous, and if the CFA is serious in doing this, it really has me questioning why they didn't just do this 10 or 15 years ago, and why are they just giving into Lippi? It's really disappointing, but I do have a strong feeling that this is Lippi playing it up for the media, and that the CFA or the powers that be in the government are not going to be as accepting of this.
Strong words there. I mean, I don't know where you want to jump in, Cam. Did you share the skepticism about whether this is going to happen or not? And for you, is it equally just a terrible kind of reflection on where Chinese football's at the moment?
I do understand where Brandon's coming from. I think his words are probably quite reflective of a fairly large section of the Chinese football world. It really depends who you're talking about. I mean, for me, regardless of if you have Chinese ethnicity or how long you spent in China, the point is, for me, is that you need to have a very genuine, proper, authentic connection with China to represent the country. And I'm not convinced that any of the players we've mentioned or who are in the picture for naturalisation really fulfil that. I mean, Yunaris has got a Chinese granny, and at least a whole setter, also a Guam player, I mean, I think his mum's Chinese. But obviously these guys have only just arrived in China. I think Jose might personally have spent time in China when he was younger, whatever, I don't know. But it's obvious that there's plenty of reason to question how genuine their link to China really is. And this is before you even mention guys like Elkeson or Goulart, who would qualify through FIFA's 5-year rule. And I just don't think that rule's right. I don't think you can really truly represent a country if you've only lived there for 5 years. I don't know what the answer is. I wouldn't like to put an exact number on it, but we all know that China's a country which is very different to the Western world and even the South American world where these guys come from, and it's a big jump to make. As for Lippi, I think we mentioned last time that Lippi was a bit of a mystery to us why he came back. Well, I think this might be the reason why he resigned, and that, well, he didn't sign a new contract, and then suddenly he's back in the picture. It seems to be that he's made a condition for the players he will work with to be very much improved, and naturalising players is an easy way to achieve that. So I totally understand what Brandon's saying. Although there is a flip side to it, I do think that bringing in players who are not ethnically Chinese or have only a grandparent relationship to China, that could, in a good way, if these players were genuinely had a genuine connection to China or became genuine about their Chinese identity, that could be a good thing to open up what being Chinese is. But that's kind of a different matter, really. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this debate plays out, because as Brandon says, it does go to the soul not only of Chinese football but China itself.
But to me, the point that really is bothersome about this, I understand saying, okay, with Yanaris has already represented China. I mean, he's the first naturalized player to represent China. He played in the friendlies earlier this month. You have Yanaris, you have Hoseader, Yanaris is already in the national team setup. You have him there. In theory, Browning is going to be naturalized. Tyus Browning at Guangzhou is going to be naturalized fairly quickly. And so you have these players that have some Chinese roots, but then to bring in these other, you're potentially going to have 4 or 5 players that a year ago had never dreamed of playing for China before. And that is just it's too much at once. I can understand like the gradual approach with Yanaris making it acceptable and maybe down the line to having another player or something, or approach like Japan did, where it is a guy like Elkeson who they just naturalized, but it was only one player at a time. But if the national team is going to be 4 or 5 players, that the joke was becoming that, you know, there's a 50, you know, China prides itself on 56 different ethnic groups, and that all of a sudden there's a 57th ethnic group, which is Brazilian footballers. And that's what it's going to be. It's just, it's too much at once.
I think that we have to wait and see how it really turns out. There's a lot of rumors flying about that there's going to be more players going to be naturalized guys who we've not even heard of, but it really depends how it plays out. I am still not convinced that we're going to see players who have zero ethnic connection to China appear, although the signs in the media seem to be pretty strong that that's going to happen. I'm taking an approach that I'll believe it when I see Elkeson in a China shirt.
Well, believe it when you see it is a pretty healthy approach to take to pretty much any rumours that we have to deal with, but there does seem to be a lot of traction behind this one. I mean, I share the thoughts of you guys in terms of a lot of the, you know, big questions that this raises. And I don't know, I think it's just a little bit depressing as well that, you know, naturalising, you know, second-rate Brazilians in the national team scheme of things is about 10 or 15 years old as a tactic and a technique in international football. Countries have moved on from that. They develop their own young players now, and it's frustrating to see the CFA kind of chasing yesterday's headlines in a way. I mean, if this does go ahead, I wanted to talk a bit about what it would mean for the league as well, because presumably, Brandon, this would destroy the competitive balance even further than it already has, if suddenly you're getting another free domestic player and a free foreign slot, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, if Elkison and Goulart are naturalized, that would be a big coup for their sides. And I agree with Cameron that I don't really think it's very likely. But going back to your point about it being depressing, I think that's something that we need to look at, is that with these guys being naturalized, it doesn't necessarily, even for a World Cup where China has an advantage because it's being played in Asia with Qatar, so that's one less side involved, it doesn't put China over the top. I mean, yes, it makes China more competitive in theory, but is China an automatic to go through? Is China going to be better on paper than Korea and Japan and Iran and these other sides? They're not. And that's what it's like. If I can understand selling, I mean, making a deal with the devil to go through and get into the World Cup, but this just seems like it's not even enough. And if you're going, I mean, it's just, it's the wrong time to be doing this.
Yeah, there's undoubtedly scope for embarrassment there if it doesn't work out. Do you think, Cam, what would be the public reaction if do you think the public reaction would change if bringing in these foreign players did help get them over the line and did ensure kind of a return to the world stage?
Football fans anywhere love when their team wins, and if the team's winning, they don't really care that much about the details. I mean, I've been looking online, I've been trying to see what the word is out there. It seems to be pretty split between people who think that it's a good idea because the Chinese football team's underachieved for so long and there doesn't seem to be any prospect of that ever changing in terms of new talent coming through, and also people who quite fairly say that these guys are not Chinese at all, why the hell should we completely change, do a Qatar as it were, and get all these fake Chinese, for want of a better way of saying it, to play for China. But, you know, if China came in and these guys made a big difference, I don't think the fans would quibble too much. I disagree a little bit with Brandon. I think that Elkison and Goulart, I mean, these guys are way, way ahead of anybody China's got, with the possible exception of Willie. And I think that, I don't think they'd be automatic qualifiers by any means, because you could never say China will automatically be successful in anything to do with football. But I think they'd be... I think they would make a definite difference.
Well, we'll come back to this story with updates as things do transpire or not. I'm very interested to see what people have got to say, kind of in the feedback in the comments as well, because it is quite a polarizing issue. One other kind of piece of off-pitch action that I wanted to catch up on in the first half of the show, and this is maybe one that everyone agrees on. We see yet again the CFA changing the rules halfway through a season. This time we see further changes to eligibility criteria, basically, that there is a new rule for foreign players in your matchday squads and another tweak to the much maligned under 23 rule. Brandon, can you get us up to speed with what the rules are going to be for the second half of the season?
So the rules for the foreigners, you're allowed three foreigners on the pitch at most at one time. So you can bring in your fourth foreigner as a substitution for one of your foreigners if you want, which is something that you previously couldn't. And then the U23 rule gets rid of making it the same amount of foreigners as U23 players and makes it so that you have to have one U23 player on the pitch at all times, but that's it. And so you don't have an issue where, like with RNF over the weekend, taking off their U23 player less than a minute into the match.
So, I mean, we can talk a bit about what this does for the league's credibility, but firstly, I'll stay with you on this and then come to Cam afterwards. Do you think these rules are improvement on the previous interpretation of foreigner and under 23 quotas?
Yeah, I think it's okay. I mean, I think going back to the 3+1 rule for foreigners is the way to go. This doesn't quite do that, but I'm okay with the way that's designed. The U23 rule sort of gets to what it should have been all along. I mean, it makes sure that you get rid of these farcical substitutions and everything that you had. Unfortunately, it won't develop as many players, but as for quality of play and as for actually developing at least one U23 player, it will do that. So I'm happy with the rules, the rule changes. The timing maybe not the best, but overall, I think this one, the CFA pretty much got it right.
You're back to your old CFA defending self. That's good to see. I disagree on a couple of those points, but firstly, I want to hear what our man in Shanghai has to say on the rule changes.
I think the rules is definitely a positive change, but this is, as Brandon rightly said, it should have been like this from the start, and anybody who knows anything about football would have made the suggestion right from the beginning. It just suggests that the CFA were not doing this for football reasons, and their understanding, or whoever the decision maker is, their understanding of actually the simple basic facts of football are pretty poor. Because this rule is just so straightforward and so obvious that they should have had it like this all along. And they're kind of admitting that by making a change in the middle of the season. And to change this rule in the middle of the season, I think, is just so completely unnecessary. It's just kind of absurd. If they're going to change the rules, fine, but do it at the end of the season. As things stand this season, we've had three distinct periods of the season where there's different rules are applied to player eligibility. The first couple of games, no one was allowed to use naturalised players for reasons which were never made clear or never even officially stated. Then we've had the current rules up until, I think, the next round. And then there's going to be the new rule change, where the rule we just talked about, which is going to be from the 16th round onwards. So it doesn't take a genius to work out that if you don't use the same rules to about which players you can pick for every round, that it affects the integrity of the competition. So they've scored an own goal that way, and I just, even though I think it's an improvement, I think it would have been much better to wait till the end of the season to make this change.
Yeah, and it's the second year running that they've changed the rules midway through the season. It makes it very difficult to take the league seriously sometimes. I mean, is that a concern that you share, Brandon? And also, are there any teams that you think are going to be particularly advantaged by these changes in the second half of the year?
I take the long view on this. You know, it was around back in the day when we were dealing with the black whistles and all of that, and a lot of corruption in the league. And so sort of these sort of things, it's bad, but it's not as bad as it once was. And you know, what was it like 6 or 7 years ago at this point, that there's the mid-season Evergrande rule where they were allowed 5 foreign players. So these sort of things, it's nothing really new. And at least in this case, it's a move in the right direction, I feel. So I'm okay with it. I think it definitely benefits the sides that that are the league leaders, or at least the sides that have money. And outside of the league leaders, I think outside of the top four sides, that's basically just Jiangsu and maybe Shenhua, who have money to really go out and now spend on a quality fourth foreigner. Although I don't think a lot of the teams are going, I think it's only going to be possibly Shenhua and Suning that really change foreigners or take advantage of this rule.
I love the faith that you have in Shenhua's transfer policy. I think you're the only guy on the pod who has any. we'll see what the rules, what impact they have on the transfer window. We're not going to talk too much about transfers because the window's about to open. There'll be plenty of rumours and confirmed deals for us to look at as we go through. Just before we do get into the second half of the show, I want to give a little bit of editorialising here, though. I don't think there was a lot wrong with the under 23 rule in the first place, to be honest with you, and it grinds my gears a little bit when people are laughing at the CFA and pointing at the rule makers for the ridiculousness of teams taking off an under 23 player after a minute. It's not their fault. We should be laughing at the clubs. It should be complete ridicule for clubs that are unable to develop youth players at all, or have a managerial structure where they just can't trust them to even be on the pitch without hauling them off immediately. I don't really think the rule was the problem. It's more kind of the all of the things that scuttled out from under the rock that the rule kind of highlighted. But let's move onwards, and we will come back to a feature that we've not had in recent special edition pods. It's time for Phenomenon of the Week.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
The winner of the last poll, this is a reminder of just how long ago it is that we last spoke, was the scientific connotation of patriotism, ahead of the inspirational camp that the Ladies World Cup team had prior to their send-off. Coming in second, everyone's favourite shipping news portal, splash247.com, and in an unfortunate third place, the URA match day experience. We've got a lot of weeks, actually, to look back on, so I'm expecting some good nominations here. The upshot of all of that is, Brandon, you do get first pick and an open field this week. What have you got for us?
All right. With that being the case, while I would like to say I want to give it to Renato Augusto for his unbelievable individual effort against RNF and basically for putting Guan on his back and finding ways to win against Tianjin, against RNF in recent times, I'm going to give it to Lhasa Urban Construction's Suwang Funsuk, or however you say his name. I'm sorry, very sorry about that, but he scored in the League 2 match over the weekend and was the first ever Tibetan player to score in a Chinese professional match. So 25 years and the first time a Tibetan ever scored. It has to be him for me.
Here, that's a strong nomination. Cam, what have you got to follow up with that one? Have you got any more shipping portals for us?
No, I don't have shipping portal news, but I'd like to nominate Jiangsu fans for their ridiculously melodramatic reaction to losing to Xinhua for the first time ever in Nanjing, even to the point that they were throwing stuff on the pitch. They were shouting "Jiachou," like, which means fake game, at the players, and even the club even made an official apology. And I know that this is the worst Xinhua team ever, and for people who are Xinhua fans, it's really funny to have seen that, but I think their reaction was completely ridiculous. And it's like a historical anomaly that Xinhua has never won there, because Jiangsu's never been like a really strong team. It's just one of these things, and it was inevitable that Xinhua would win eventually. And I think for people listening who probably don't understand the background, is that Jiangsu completely hate Xinhua, but it's a very asymmetric rivalry where Xinhua don't really care that much back. So they take the rivalry very seriously. And unfortunately for them, they lost against the weakest Xinhua team which has ever went to Nanjing. So the Jiangsu fans are my phenomenon of the week.
Well, at least you have thrown them a bone of them getting nominated on the pod. You've got to give them something in these hard times. I am going to nominate a man who's had lots of phenomenon of the week love over the years for various reasons. For me, it's got to be Wei Shihao for his one-man reimagining of the haircut of Taribo West from the mid-90s. It's absolutely amazing.
Pineapple, is it?
It's words fail me. You need to use whatever search engine isn't blocked wherever you're listening to this and enjoy the full monstrosity. It's good to see that terrible fashion choices and haircuts aren't the sole preserve of European footballers. So, quite a mixed bag there, as always. Plenty for people to get stuck into. We look forward to seeing who tops the poll, and we'll be back with another one next week. But it's time for us to get back to the actual football, I think. Four rounds since we last spoke. It's pretty much status quo at the top of the league still. Looking at the teams who've done better and worse in the month that we've been away, I mean, you would have to say the top three have been the big winners of the month, really, Brandon.
Yeah, for sure. It's basically stayed the same. SIPG beat Guan, but then lost to Evergrande, and it's status quo at the top. I'm actually starting to believe that Guan has a chance at winning the league this year. Things have gone well, and none of those sides have really met much of a challenge at any point.
In fact, yeah, there's a very good question, I think, that we can get to now that came in from Jeff on Twitter, asking, do we feel that the lopsided nature of the CSL this year, with the top three being so much better than everyone else, actually make it difficult for the other two to catch Guan, because Guan are basically beating everybody? What are your feelings on that, Cam?
No, I think it's pretty open. I'm just surprised that Evergrande are still in the thick of it. I mean, I criticise them quite a lot with their ridiculous two foreign player self-limitation, but they seem to have conveniently dropped that. And no coincidence that's coincided with an uptick in the form. And in fact, of course, they actually beat SIPG a couple of weeks ago which was a very big win for them, and showed that they're definitely not a spent force. So I still think Guan are just a better team. They're a better team on paper than everybody. And I don't see how they can't win it unless they screw it up. But other than that, I hope it's going to be a tight race, because there's only 5 points separating the top three. And of course, as you said, the rest of the teams are a long way behind, but I suppose that makes it easier to focus on who might win.
Yeah, there's much of a muchness behind them, obviously. And you're famous for your pessimism in some ways about the team's chances, Brandon. In general, what's the mood like among fans in the capital now? I mean, that they've won 13 of 14. That loss at Shanghai Stadium and going out of the ACL, we thought it might have set them back. It doesn't seem to have. They've won a few tight games since then. Is there kind of confidence or nervous anticipation, or are people being a bit more realistic and saying, look, still a long way to go at this point?
Yeah, I think a lot of the fans tend to be very optimistic, and so they're very happy about where Guan is. I'm, as you said, I'm universally a pessimist when it comes to Guan, but I'm myself starting to be a little more optimistic. The way things pan out, you know, there are some tough away matches, but all of the real tough matches, so Evergrande, SIPG, Shandong are all going to be at Gongti, and really the toughest away match over the years for Guan that's remaining is at Hongkou, and we know where Shenhua is this year, so there's reason to be optimistic. I think the biggest test is going to be this weekend at Shandong, and if they can keep it at 4 points or better, after they can keep the lead 4 points or better going into the midway point, I think there's no reason to think that Guan shouldn't win the title this year.
All these words are going to come back to haunt us. I mean, you know my predictions. There's no need to go back through those again. I wanted to come back to you, Cam, on this idea of the top three, because I mean, this is something we see across football. I mean, it's killing top flight European football in a way that the or a ball is kicked. Is it money? Is it good management? Is it ineptitude?
I think it's mostly good management. I think Guan they've mostly avoided some of the political games which have went on. Their chairman's, I think, been pretty focused on managing to get Majin to sign the right players for the club. SIPG have been very, very stable. They have not signed anybody at all for the last 2 years. Evergrande speak for themselves. I mean, they've kind of gone off the rails a little bit, as we've said, with their strange restrictions, but the results prove that they're still a really capable, solid team. All of the top three in the CSL, relatively speaking, are more professional, more stable than the rest of the league, and the
yeah, lessons for the rest of the league to learn. Whether they're capable of doing so, not so sure. And moving from those three to a team and some more off-field issues who are clearly not being run particularly professionally. Brandon, I think we need to talk a bit about what's going on up in Dalian. We had a lot of furore around Hamsik being a disastrous signing at the start of the year, and it's really kicking off around Yannick Carrasco now. It looks like he's all but guaranteed to be leaving them, and leaving them in acrimonious circumstances as well. There's a bit of kind of, he said, she said going on about it at the moment. What's the club side of the story, and what's the player saying at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, the club is basically saying that Carrasco is not giving his best effort, hasn't been willing to perform, hasn't really met their requirements, everything. And Carrasco would say, oh, he's willing to perform, he's willing to play and everything, and he wants to represent the club, and he has the club's interest in his heart and all of this stuff. What it really comes down to, I think, is that neither side, I mean, these two sides are just part. There's been issues with Carrasco since he came. He took a long break at one point, not coming back to China in time. He literally assaulted one of his teammates, and broke his nose in a locker room scuffle at some point last season. It's just the two sides should go their separate ways. Carrasco has plenty of interest in him from some top European teams, and that should be the end of it. I think what it comes down to is issues with salary or not wanting to pay him, considering the effort, the performances he's put into it. But for Dalian, it's going to be tough, especially if they lose both Hamsik and Carrasco, to bring in someone new, especially the way that Carrasco is massaging the English media.
Yeah, with a number of fans of, I think, English-based teams looking to believe his side of the story so they don't think they're getting some unmotivated mercenary. That's an interesting angle to it. Cam, is this something that you think we can extrapolate? Are Dalian just kind of this season's version of Chuen Zhen last year, where they flew a bit too close to the sun and all the money they threw around seems to have not had the impact we thought it would? Or is this just a case of you know, one bad egg not being a good fit for his club?
I think that you have to look at who's in control at Dalian now of operations. Is Zhou Jun, who was Xinhua's operations manager for the best part of 10 years. Whilst he oversaw Xinhua's transfer policy, which saw millions of dollars wasted on ineffective, crap foreign players, and this guy would have pocketed massive commissions from these transfers. And these were transfers which were engineered every single season. For many years, Xinhua would change the foreign players as often as the window transfer rules permitted. So every time you make a transfer, middlemen, agents, and people inside the clubs in China get paid a lot of money in their pocket, and often under the table. So the fact that he's went to Dalian, I think about a year ago now, I don't think he was behind Carrasco moving into Dalian. That was before he moved there, but I think his first big play card was bringing Hamsik, and look how that's turned out. So I think that's definitely an issue there, and it'll be interesting to see if he keeps his job at Dalian.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't tell us about the club, it just tells us about the guy who's running it, as you said. I mean, this also raises an interesting question for me, Brandon, in terms of Wanda. We know have a lot of interest in football and have no end of money that they want to throw at it, but given the challenges they have getting players to settle there, given how stable the top three are looking to a degree, is there a bit of a glass ceiling there that really make a difference and build an ACL side if you were to take over a mid-table?
Yeah, I think there's a definite, there's only so far you can go, because you need to have a certain level of young talent coming up, because most of these sides don't have very much talent in their current starting lineup. And I mean, you can bring in as many foreigners as you want, but I think one of the biggest issues that we're seeing, and you know, I'll take a shot at SIPG and possibly why we don't see SIPG making any transfers or anything, you need to have a really good scouting network as well. And you look at some of the players that Guan has brought in with Zhou Dehai and Wang Gang, and these are guys that they pretty much have not even anywhere near in the national team prospects, and have come to Guan, have proven themselves, and are now getting looked at by the national team managers. I mean, the current national teamers are way too expensive, and there's teams aren't going to sell them. And so you really need to have a very strong network to find the best players to bring in. And it's not an easy task. And these sort of mid-table sides aren't going to have that in place. And so you have to rely on whatever you have coming up, or try to purchase some young players from nearby provincial teams or something. I think that's the only way to really get a switch in things. I think going into the transfer window talks next week, I think that's going to be the thing that's going to hold back a lot of sides right now.
Yeah, good point, actually. The kind of scouting and signing of you know, domestic players and squad players often quite overlooked. Cam, I mean, if we put you in charge of a CSL team tomorrow, I mean, firstly, I want front row tickets because I think it'd be fantastic to see. But secondly, I mean, what would be your first order of business? Would you have the same priority as Brandon there? Would you look at getting the right big imports in? Would you look at getting the manager right? What do you think is the key step that all the clubs tend to miss?
I agree with Brandon. Scouting is a very important point. There's not very sophisticated scout network in place, and even when there is, it's often overrided by relationships, which agents are willing to put the biggest amount of bung under the table, or who's willing to sign someone because they're going to get some other kind of personal benefit. Football is often either is not in the equation at all, or it's well down the priority list in terms of why a player moves from Club A to Club B. Obviously, that would be a very difficult thing to stamp out in China, but that would be top order of business. Other thing would be to do a lot more research on, in terms of looking at players' histories. For example, Tevez, could anyone possibly imagine that he would come to Shanghai and not be able to fit in? This is a guy who complained that it rained too much in Manchester. So you got to think about these things. It's nothing complicated or hard to understand. It's just that there's so many other interests which override things which would appear to be common sense to the average person on the street. And so to that extent, you can already see why the things which go wrong are so obvious, but why they keep going wrong, they aren't fixed. It's because there's powerful interests and money change hands for people to either accept these things or turn a blind eye, and that's what needs to change in the game. Also, another related thing is, like Brandon mentioned, provincial teams. A good point. And you think about teams which are the pool out there, the pyramid in China, the league pyramid is there. There's League One, there's League Two, there's CSL, and there's an amateur league, but it's not very well established. It's actually, compared to China, for the size of China, it's tiny. So that's why you see these guys who stay at CSL clubs and play in the reserves all their career, because they don't really want to leave their hometown, or they don't really have anywhere else to go. They don't want to move too far down the league because either they can't, because the teams can't afford to pay them very much, or they just don't want to go play in a city where there's only like 50 guys watching the game. So you really need to put things in place to encourage the growth of football as a whole and make more broad and flourishing.
It all sounds so straightforward when we kind of put the world to rights here, and yet so many clubs don't get it right. It's very kind of frustrating to see. I think that's a nice little angle for us to wrap things up on this week. There's plenty more for us to get into next week. We will start to look at the transfer window, look back on that big game, maybe the toughest trip that's facing Guoan left, and of course wrap up the Champions League ties for the teams who are still in there. There's plenty that we've covered though this week, so hopefully, listeners, you've enjoyed having us back on our regular schedule. And please, if you do enjoy listening to the pod, do consider writing in with some questions or input, and supporting us on Patreon also. It would go a long way. And please do share the pod, write a review, recommend us to your friends. Every little helps. But with that shameless plug aside, this has been your Chinese Football Podcast for this week. Brandon, great to have you on the pod again.
Yeah, after all the Guan SBs on the train ride, I'll just respond with a Shini Baba.
And Cam, hopefully you don't need to do any kind of very nicely voiced dubbing of what any of us have said this week.
No. But I was at an event earlier this week at Leon Business School, and someone was saying that I should have brought my wife to translate from my accent, because people in the audience said afterwards they weren't sure what I was saying. So hopefully nobody listening to the pod has this problem. But anyway, it's a much fresher and more clear-headed end to this week's pod than it was last week. So on that note, yeah, thanks. It's been a good one.
As always, it's great to be back. And we will continue to keep things rolling on this regular schedule from next week. But for this week, this has been your Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. And I've been your host, Steve Crooks. Thanks for listening.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。